we had a few examples. Graphs or networks. We have seen when you start with a given graph or with a given network, it might be very complicated, might also have disconnected components, might have local structures. It's difficult to see from the simple eye what kind of key properties this graph has. So we have seen very simple properties like the clustering coefficient C, which is measuring the number of triangles. That's one measure to characterize the graph, but not the complete graph, characterization. Obviously, the number of triangles is just one characterization out of many other ones. We have seen that we can define the graph Laplacian, which is actually a one-to-one exact correspondence to the graph Aij, that is the graph Laplacian, the adjacency matrix, and graph Laplacian is the next step. The adjacency matrix, which is zero if I and J not connected, and one if I and J connected. And so this is, of course, one way to store your graph in a computer program by just having a large n times n matrix where n is the number of nodes. So for every n, this is a yes connected or no, not connected, zero. Of course, it's a very efficient way to store your to your graph. Normally, as I said on Tuesday, normally you define a class for every class which is defining the node properties, and in this class you would have two entries for the index of the node and an array with all its neighbors, so where it's connected. So this would have four neighbors, this would have one neighbor. So this is, of course, a much more efficient way to store your graph. So there's the graph spectra, which is eigenvalues of the adjacency matrix. So eigenvalues of A and J, that is denoted as the graph spectra. And we have seen that for a completely random graph, this might be just a single ellipse, where this here is 2 times square root of the coordination number, average degree 2 minus 2. But we would like to discuss more in detail the graph Laplacian, which is also has something to do with eigenvalues. But eigenvalues not of the adjacency matrix, but of the graph Laplacian. And this is something nicely to interpret. And as I said Tuesday, the reason one looks at graph spectra or the eigenvalue of the graph Laplacian is that you know if they have a certain properties, the graph you can interpret that. For example, this one was here for completely arbitrary random graph. And if you calculate the spectrum of the graph, you find it very differently, you know that it's a random graph. So today we want to discuss the first step, the graph of last year. And And there are two versions of the graph Laplacian, the normal graph Laplacian and the normalized. I first define the normal one and then the normalized, and everybody is then using the normalized graph Laplacian. And so we have motivated last time that this is a large lambda, brief lambda here. It is a matrix where I and j goes over the index of the graph. And this matrix has the following form. That is zi, the coordination number of psi I, delta I j minus Aij, where Aij is the adjacency matrix. And you've seen this is, let's say, if you consider something simple like this geometry, then this corresponds to the discrete version of the second derivative in all directions. Because you have z in the middle one for delta ij, and you get a contribution of the function from all the neighboring sides. And what we will discuss more detail is a normalized graph Laplacian, which is just the same, just dividing by some appropriate factors. Mainly that is called lambda ij, which is, let me put it like that, 1 if I equals k, and minus 1 over the square root of di dj if I and j is connected, and zero otherwise. So it is the same matrix as here, I just divide and normalize it in the way that I put the central index to 1, and the links are not anymore 1 or 0, but normalized by the respective coordination numbers of the sides which are there. And the reason one does that, this has really extremely nice mathematical properties. The eigenvalues are very simple to interpret. I'm not going to prove all mathematical properties, I will give one another example. So we're interested in the eigenvalues. It's a symmetric matrix, so we can calculate the eigenvalues, which we denote lambda L, L equals 1 to n. So first of all, one can prove that lambda L are positive, when actually they are smaller than 2. So we have a series of eigenvalues, 0 smaller than lambda 0, smaller equals than 2. So all eigenvalues are in the interval 0, 2. That's why it's called normalized, or the spectrum is limited. There's no proof. This is just. I'm not proving that. This is a. You can show
that. 0 and 2? They are between 0 and 2?
Yeah, they're between 0 and 2.
Right?
Why? Well, 0 I will not show, and 2 I will also motivate. But I'm not proving that mathematical statement. But I will give a motivation by that. It's the case. So, what is the interpretation of these eigenvalues? So the zero of the eigenvalue 0 is simple to interpret because the smallest eigenvalue corresponds to the following eigenfunction. So lambda 0 equals 0 equals the normalization function. And here this k1, k2, kn. And this has always exist, and lambda 0 is always 0. And you can actually very easily see that this is an exact eigen function of this matrix. For example, if you consider lambda 1 I di, so these are the components of this eigenvalue, then you have that this is 1 over c, then you have sum over all the neighbors. So, okay, let's okay, first this one, the first one is delta ij, so this is k1, 0, 0, minus 1 over square root of the normalization factor. Then I have the number, this one here, and I have the same over all nearest neighbors, so that is zi, z1, zj. Oh, actually, I'll do the sum here. Minus sum over j connected. And then what do I have? I say matrix multiplication. So I have them here. Z, sorry, k. Sometimes I'm using k instead of z, sorry about that. Because k is the index and zi is the termination number. This is then zj, 0, 0. And now you see that these two cancel, and I have z1 neighbors. So I get a square root, so this is exactly 0. So it's very simple to see that this is an eigenvalue. And the interpretation is very simple. Namely, if you have more than one disconnected component, and that's also very easy to see, that corresponds exactly to the degeneracy of lambda 0.
Excuse me, what is z here?
Well, z actually
uses k.
Yeah, I should use k. As I said, my z and my k happens to interchange places often.
The k comes intuitively clear because it's
in. So I could use k here instead of k bar. So there can there are several notations one uses, and I'm mixing up sometimes. In the script, I always use k, but sometimes I'm using z here on the blackboard.
Is that the degree of the matrix?
Sorry.
Is that the degree of the matrix?
Yeah, yeah, that's the degree of the matrix. I forgot to say that, as I said, sometimes I'm using that. So z is normally the average degree, but pretty often I also use zi for ki. But, yeah. To be really consistent, I always just use ki. So if I have more than one disconnected component, so let's say I have a graph which looks like that, 1, 2, 3. 3, 4, 5, and they are disconnected, my eigenvalue is 2 times eigenvalue of lambda equals 0 is degenerate, because I can have 2 z1, okay, let's use k, k1, k2, 0, 0, 0 is an eigenvalue, eigenstate, and 0, 0, k2, k3, sorry, k3, k4, k5 is another state which both have lambda 0 equals lambda 1 equals 0 of the graph, of the normalized graph Laplacian. The proof is exactly the same here. If you are not disconnected, if there's a part which is disconnected, I can just put everything to 0, and the proof that this is an eigenstate is exactly the same here. So that means that the interpretation is very simple. Degeneracy of lambda 0 equals 0 is identical to the number of disconnected components. So if you calculate, so you don't have to find them by an algorithm, it is sufficient to calculate the eigenvalue of the graph Laplacian, and you know how many disconnected components your graph has.
So degeneracy, you mean the multiplicity of
the graph. Yeah, okay. That's the same. Then the largest eigenvalue, lambda n, actually n minus 1, because oh, I started this, normally I start with n lambda 0, so it's close to n minus 1. Normally I start with 0 and n minus 1. Lambda n minus 0 is 2 if the network is bipartite. Then and only then if the graph is bipartite. So let me remember, a bipartite graph is if you have A types and B types of vertices, and they are only connected mutually, but there's no connection between B types and there's no connection between A types. So if you have a bipartite graph, the largest eigenvalue is 2. I will give you an example of how the eigenvalues look like shortly if it's a complete bipartite graph.
Sorry, one question.
Yeah.
There are two nodes in your example which seems to be disconnected as well from the rest of the graph. Is this okay? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this would mean that lambda 0 is, has a degeneracy of 2, but it's still a bipartite graph. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this would also be a bipartite graph. But it is also very simple. So in the simple graphs, you have more than one possibility. And you also can show, you're not proving that, generally the inequality holds that sum over lambda over all eigenvalues is smaller than n. And at exactly n, if it is a connected graph, so sum over n identical to n, if and only if there's only one lambda 0, so lambda 0 is has degeneracy 0, 1, for multiplicity, be 1. the graph is fully connected, not fully connected. If there's only one connected component, so there's a pass from every side to every other one, then the sum over all eigenvalues is n. So this is, I'm not proving that. Let me give some more examples. Let's take a complete graph. Which is like a large clique. Everything is connected with everything. And so on. So I have five. So that's a complete graph. Everything is connected with everything. Then the eigenvalues are very simple, namely lambda 0 equals 0, that we already know. And all the other eigenvalues are actually lambda L, I can show, is n divided by n minus 1 for all other L's. L equals 1 over n minus 1. So what does it mean? We have, if you look at this graphically, essentially all eigenvalues are very close to 1. So if n is very large, this is very close to 1. And by the way, is the sum rule fulfilled? Yeah?
Could you explain one more time, sir? How did you say that lambda 0 is 0? There is no disconnected component.
Yeah. That's why we have always one eigenfunction. So that we have only one component. So we always have one lambda 0. Because the eigenfunction, there's always this eigenfunction. K1, K2, Kn. This is always one eigenfunction, and this has the eigenvalue 0.
The eigenvalue 0 is always there?
Yes. It's a multiplicity of the number of components, and there's one component. So there's one lambda 0. So by the way, you can show that the sum rule is there. So what is the sum rule? You have lambda 0 plus, how many do you have? N minus 1 plus N minus 1, N divided by N minus 1 equals N. So the sum over all eigenvalues is N because it's only one component. So if you look at that graphically, you can always plot that between 0 and 2. We have one here, and all other ones are here. Exactly at n divided by n minus 1. And this is a very dense graph, so you will notice immediately if you have other graphs which are very dense, but maybe not fully connected, like something like that, it's a pretty dense graph, then your eigenvalues will tend to cluster around 1. So dense graphs will have eigenvalues which are around 1. Of course, you can make many examples and see that. Another example, now we come to the eigenvalue 2, is a complete bipartite graph. So that is the following. So we have A sides and B sides. And they are completely interconnected. So, of course, there is no connection between B's and A's, but every B is connected with any B's is connected with every A's and vice versa. So, completely bipartite graph, so the most dense bipartite graph. And then you can write down the eigenfunction immediately, E of lambda n minus 1, the eigenfunction is a normalization. Times this way here we have it simpler. I could put generalize it to another one. KA. These are all the A nodes. I'm going to explain that. Minus KB minus KB. Where KA here, this equals 4 here and KB equals 3, so that is just the degree of, which in this case is everywhere for all the same because they're completely connected, so all B sides have a degree 3 in this case and all A sides have a degree 4 in this case. And you can very easily see if you look at the graph Laplacian and leave it as an exercise. You can very just apply the graph Laplacian to this function, and you immediately see that the eigenvalue is 2. So, before here we had our plus, and in the graph Laplacian we had the plus and the minus sign cancelling each other. Now we have a plus and the minus times the minus, so they add each other, and they just add exactly 2. So the eigenvalue 2 has to do with, this was your question, how bipartite the lattice is. And if you have many eigenvalues close to 2, that means if the largest eigenvalue is close to 2, then you see it's nearly bipartite. So let's say you have this one, but maybe a single link here, then your eigenvalue will not be exactly 2, but close to 2. So that is something you can then measure. So these are some examples. Of course, you could go much deeper into mathematical theories. You're not doing this. They're giving you an overview of tools you might be interested to use to examine a graph you might have of a network, and graph Laplacian is something very nice. So in case you really need that, of course you would need to go a little bit deeper and learn about that. But it's very simple to implement on the computer. It's very simple. It's just a matrix. You just calculate the eigenvalues of this matrix, and you just plot your eigenvalues in the interval between 0 and 2. And then you see where they're located. And then, of course, you compare with reference graphs where you know what kind of properties they have.
In this part, we could say that this graph has one eigenvalue at 0 and one at 2.
Yeah.
And about the other eigenvalues, you have to just calculate it.
Yeah, maybe for the simple graph you could do that analytically. I don't know actually. Maybe because it's so simple, you could find them all analytically. I don't know that. But otherwise, of course, you just have to do calculate that. And since it's pretty dense, most of them will be close to 1. So, this, for example, is one of the many possible subjects you could have if you want to do a small seminar talk at the end of the term, to take a few graphs, calculate the graph Laplacian, do a little interpretation. That is a possible subject for a seminar talk. So we're coming now to a new subject in the graph theory. So we were talking about how many disconnected components we have, and this problem is also denoted percolation, namely whether you have one large component or many small components. And so we will discuss percolation in generalized random graphs. So, this contrasts to the graph Laplacian and also the graph spectrum. This is now a theory which is analytically, so how you can analytically estimate whether you have a percolating graph, this one, where everything is connected with everything, or whether you have a graph which is made of many components. So in graph theory, we always have this interplay between analytic considerations and then also numerical simulations and investigation of the property. So the Erdős-Rendi graph had a Poisson degree distribution. We can generalize that to graphs which have an arbitrary degree distribution but which are still random. So these are graphs with arbitrary degree distributions arbitrary P of A. That is also called in the literature very often the configuration model. And it's very simple. You just say, I want a graph, a random graph, with a given degree distribution. So you say, because I would like to consider graphs of this type. So given a certain degree distribution or a degree sequence, which is the same just for a given n, which is just k of all the sides you have. So k1, k2, Kn, this is a set of degrees for n nodes. So what you say is, I want to construct a random graph, and for some reason I'm interested that all these nodes have exactly these degrees. I give that. That can be Poisson-like, that can be anything you would like to investigate. And I would like to have a random graph with this given degree sequence. Of course, you can calculate this degree distribution by just normalizing that. And can you do that? Yes, you can do that, because you can make out of this one a random graph by construction. So, let's say you have one degree you should have four neighbors, then you have one node, or one vertex with two, you would like to have one vertex with three, another vertex with three, and so on. So that is what you like to have. And so what you do is, you draw these vertices with stubs, so stuff is half an edge, so it's not yet connected, and then you just interconnect them randomly. So I say, okay, I make a random connection. Let's say here to here, 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 and or this one here. So I was unlucky, so I have to start again because I didn't want to have that. So if this happens, you start again like this and like this. So you draw your computer, you create an array of your vertices with number of stuff you want and random interconnections. Of course it doesn't work if you have odd numbers of stubs because then one is left over, but if you have an even number of stubs, that always will work. So in this way you are sure that the graph you constructed has the desired degree distribution or degree sequence. And this is called the configuration model, because now you can calculate in your computer the simulation or analytically the properties of these kind of random graphs. So this is the first generalization behind Erdős Rönnick graph. A random graph is an arbitrary degree distribution.
Just one question. There are two vertices connected via two paths.
Oh, this is also bad.
This is not really good for
graph. Yeah, that's also bad. So you have to start over again, yeah. So, for these small graphs,
but it's not possible. You have four stubs in one.
Yeah, is there there's an upper limit for the number of stubs, right?
How?
I cannot have an arbitrary high number of stubs if I have only the three or four
minus one
at maximum. Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's of course true. The standard that you can always do that, that's of course not exactly true. You can always, essentially always do that for most realistic degree distribution, because the number of vertices with very large degrees normally goes down pretty rapidly. And of course if you want to have very large, you cannot have a degree, 20 if you have only 10 nodes. So sometimes it may fail. But in practice, for most degree distributed studies, that's not a problem. But you're right, of course. And so, in the algorithm for the computer, you have to take care that this is not happening. Of course, you can do that now. Before interconnecting one vertices with another side, you check whether they're already connected or not, and you connect only to a different one. So, in the randomly to another one, so in practice, you would take care of this. So, most of the time, this algorithm then converges. So, for these kinds, we would like to calculate the calculation properties. Before we do that, a few simple properties for point Z of the jump intermix equals expectation value of the degree of the sum over k k pk. This is given. And now, since it's a random graph, it's very important that the clustering coefficient is still going down like 1 over n in the thermodynamic limit. So since it's still a random graph, we still have in the thermodynamic limit, so for a large number of sides, no loops, or only a finite number of loops for n to infinity. Because if you connect this one with this one and this one with this one, there's a probability that you also connect this one with this one is going like 1 over n. So the construct, the probability to construct loops is very low as long as Z is finite. Yeah.
Like, what's the relationship between the distribution and the nodes, degree nodes here?
Well, this is just the distribution is just normalized. As the distribution is normalized, sum over k, pk equals 1.
Yes.
So if you have a degree sequence, then you have to look, let's say, what you already have. Let's say you have 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you have something like that. And then your degree distribution, in this case, you have pk is the normalization, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
yeah.
1 over 5. And then this is times 2 if k equals 2 and 1 equals k equals 3, 4, or 5.
Mm-hmm.
That is then just a normalized, you just count how many vertices with degree k you have
mm-hmm.
in your sequence, and you normalize everything, then you get the degree distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Thus the probability to find a vertex with a certain degree k, which is here 2/5. And 1/5 the probability to find a vertex is degree 3.
Okay.
So the important point is why we study or people study this model is that you have an arbitrary degree distribution, so you can consider non-trivial properties, but you still don't have loops. So that makes all the analysis easier, because when you have loops, you have to take them into account. And so what we will do, I think probably shortly after the break, is to calculate the probability to find a cluster. So what we will do is, we start with a certain vertex. Then from this vertex, you will go to another vertex, to one of the neighbors. And then you will consider how many neighbors, on the average, this vertex has. And then we will go on and go to another vertex. And what we want to examine is if, on the average, this process will stop. If it stops means the cluster is finite, or if this process goes on and on and on, that means we can reach all the graph. So if this process going from one vertex to neighbor and so on can go on for eternity, we have what one calls a gigantic connected component. So essentially everything is connected with everything. If the process stops, we have disconnected components. And so in order to do that, you have to know the degree distribution of our vertex. But you also have to know the degree distribution of a vertex which I can reach. That is not the same. It's a little bit confusing at the beginning. So what we will do is, we need to calculate the degree distribution of a neighboring side. Now you might consider this is a random graph and it's the same, but it's not the same because the degree distribution of the neighboring side, because this side is reached because we start from another side. And whether this side is reached or not depends on the degree of the starting side. And this is then also called excess degree distribution. And why do we need this degree distribution of the neighboring side? Because we want to go out from this neighboring side. So we have to know, on the average, how many out degrees it has. So starting from one side, you know the degree distribution. We have to calculate the degree distribution of the neighboring side in order to know the probability to go on. And Yeah, we'll just make a small break and then we'll do that. So we have a vertex K, and this is connected to vertex T. And this vertex is selected from our degree distribution prime. This vertex has a degree K, which is corresponds to the degree distribution PK of the full lattice. And the probability distribution here, and maybe we'll just say that, is k times pk. So if this vertex has a large number nearest neighboring k, if this vertex has a large number degree k, then the probability that I go from one vertex, I select vertex B, is proportional to the number of stops or the number of neighbors it has. So if B, for example, would be one with only one neighbor, the probability that B is a neighbor of A is much smaller than the probability of this vertex to be a neighbor of A, because it has many neighbors. So the probability is that that means the degree distribution of a neighbor of B is k times pk, while the degree distribution of A, the starting vertex, is just pk. So that means the number of outgoing going stops is k minus 1. So these here are k minus 1, k minus 1 outgoing stops. Because 1, I one degree I used to go from A to B, then I go with k minus 1, I can go further on. So that means the excess degree distribution, namely the degree distribution of outgoing steps, that is Q, the probability that I have k minus 1 outgoing steps is k pk divided by the normalization sum over j j pj. That is called the excess degree distribution, or I can write that k is then k plus 1, p k plus 1, and for the normalization, sum over j, j, pj. So that is the probability distribution of finding k outgoing links of a side which is a neighbor of another side.
Can you say it one more time?
Yeah, it's always confusing at the start. So this is the probability that vertex B is being reached from another vertex, and it has the degree k. So the probability distribution, of course, I have to normalize. It's proportional to this one. Because if it has k links, I have a higher probability to find it as a neighbor. But now I'm taking the distribution of the number of outgoing links. The number of outgoing links is 1 minus k. And I just can add, so I can just make here plus 1, and I get here plus 1 here. For the normalization, doesn't matter. The normalization is just... so this is normalized, obviously, if I do the sum over k, sum over k, qk, which is the sum over k, qk minus 1. Sum over k, qk minus 1. And this is a normalized, because then here the same as here, just the normalization. Any distribution function has to be normalized. So once we have that, we have done. So that's the most difficult part, because now we can go on and on and on. We can go from A to B, we can select one of them randomly, go to C, and use this formula a second time.
Short question, J can be K? You get K, or is it?
I sum over all degrees, I call the degrees here J.
Degree of B or A?
Doesn't matter. This is K prime, maybe I could call it. It's the same, it doesn't matter how I call it. This is just a degree distribution of the lattice. It has nothing to do with the degree of A and B. This is just a normalization factor. The degree of B is K. K is here the degree of B. Because we want to calculate the excess degree distribution, namely, K is here the degree of distribution of D, and here since I added 1, K plus 1 is the degree of B, because I just made a substitution. This is just a normalization, K prime has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, but it sums also over K.
No, this is just. It's the wrong way to see that. It's just a normalization. Such that I'm normalizing that. Of course, it's also there, but this is not. So that is typical graph theory. You have to go to calculate distribution functions and often more complicated distribution functions. So that may be the simplest, more complicated distribution function. Because the degree distribution is of course just a starting distribution function.
On all the nodes in a graph, this distribution P and K prime.
So P of K. So
K no.
Let me repeat.
K.
So P of K is given. It's a degree distribution of all the graph.
Okay.
So you have many sides A, B, C. You have n sides. And P of K is a degree distribution. Generally, or P of K prime, whatever you want to call it, P of J, whatever you want to call it. And so this is just a normalization, so that this condition is fulfilled. So we argued about this proportionality. This proportionality. But proportionality is not yet a normalization. So I know that the excess degree distribution is proportional, or the degree distribution of the of B is proportional to K times BK. But of course I have to normalize that. Just normalization. Good. So that's me just using that. And so the first thing we want to calculate is the K and Q. So that is the expectation value of the number of outgoing beams of the neighbor. So the average number of outgoing beams. Why do we want to calculate that? Because we want to see whether we have clusters. So we go from A to B, we want to calculate how many other sites can I reach from B? Is this a finite, is this a large number or a small number? So this is just sum over k, k, uk. Then it's just sum over k equals 0 to infinity, k, k plus 1, p, k plus 1, sum over j, j, pj, because qk is just this formula here. I can rewrite this one. This is here, just the average degree paid actually. So z. And this one I can calculate, well, let's make 2 sum over k, k squared, pk plus sum over k, k, pk. So this is nothing else than the expectation value of k squared minus k divided by k. So this is k and q. So the important thing is the following. The average number of outgoing stubs is now something I can calculate, and it has to do not only something with the average degree k of the network, but also with something having to do with the variance or with k squared. So we can use that then now to go on iteratively and get our calculations worked out. Okay, let's denote with Zm average number of m's neighbors. So A has, so the average number of m of neighbors after m steps or one steps or m minus one step of m minus one. So the z1 equals k equals 0. So that is the number of neighbors of A. Z2 is this one, is a number of neighbors of outgoing links, sorry. This is just average total total number of may express. Theory. So A has D neighbors on the average. Then I go one step more, I go from A to B. Then I have here neighbors, but I could also go to another B. I have another neighbors, another B. And this is a total number of sides I can reach after so the second step, or the first step, or anyhow, K2 is that so it's the first nearest neighbor, and that's the second nearest neighbor. So the first nearest neighbor is D, and the second nearest neighbor is D2. And that is K, and average expectation value of K of A, times this quantity, which is K squared minus K divided by K, because I can, on the average, going having B sides, I can go, and every of these B sides has this average number of nearest neighbor, so D2 is K squared minus K, which is just D. So we will go on. Let's make a small interpreludium and calculate it for a completely random graph. So how large is actually D2 for Erdős Rányi? To get a feeling whether we have done everything correctly, this is a check. For Erdős Rányi, C2 is sum over k equals 0 to infinity. We have the Poisson degree distribution. So we have here k squared, which is this one, times the Poisson degree distribution, e to the minus t, so this is pk, d to the k to the k factorial, minus d, because that is the average degree. There is nothing else than now I can write it in the following way. This is nothing else than z, e to the minus z, sum over k equals 1 to infinity. K minus 1 plus 1, z to the k minus 1 divided by k minus 1 factorial minus z. So I've taken 1z out here, and 1k I have here, and that's the 1k missing, and k minus 1 plus k is k. So I can take the k minus 1 here, and then I get the following. Then I can take another z out, and this is normalized. I get the z squared, and this one is exactly also normalizing, and I can get z minus z, that's cancelling. So for the Erdős Rányi graph, z2 is just z squared. So that is not a surprise. We have a completely random graph, and the average number of next nearest neighbor is just the square of the nearest neighbor, because I go from one side to another side and I go randomly on. So that is for completely random graphs. This is how I got not always the case for other graphs. Okay, now we want to go to the calculation and go continue here. We go to C's, C prime, and so on. So we do this iteratively on and on. So what we want to have is the number of far away neighbors. And we use the following recursion formula, Zm equals k squared minus k divided by k Zm minus 1. Why can we do that? Because what we, the calculation we did for the first step, we can do in every step. So if we reach C, it means we reach C from another side, so the excess degree distribution of Z can be calculated in exactly the same way as of B, and so the total number of C sides is the number of B sides times the excess, the average number of outgoing degrees of a C side. So we can just do that iteratively. And so that means you go on and on, and this is just C2, if you remember, this is C2, and this is C1, so this is nothing else than C2 over C1 times Z minus 1, but we can also go on iteratively, and so we have that Zm equals to Z2 over Z1 times M minus 1 Z1. And so we are finished, because now we can see when we have calculation and when not. So what happens in the limit M going to infinity? If you do it many times over, how many sides do we reach? So obviously, we have in the limit m to infinity of zm equals either 0 for z2 smaller than z1 or infinity for z2 larger than z1. So that means if z2 is very small, smaller than z1, which is clear, so the number of next nearest neighbor is smaller than the number of on the average, smaller than the number of nearest neighbor, my process is going down. So,
it's the branches are cut down?
Yeah. Because on the average, I will have the probability less than 1 to branch. Branching zero. So we have the calculation threshold. Connected component, it means in the graph you have one component, a subgraph, where everything, all sides are in. So there might be a few sides, a finite number of sides which are not connected to this giant component, but the size of this component is proportional to n, and maybe a few are left over, but in the thermodynamic limit it's essentially all the cluster. So in this sense we have a fully connected cluster. So, for the Erdős Rényi graph, it's very simple, of course. Z2 is Z squared, Z1 So L does any. You have z2 over z1 equals z squared over z just equals z. That's what we intuitively have. If on the average we have more than one neighbor, we can connect to everybody. If on the average we have less than one neighbor, we cannot connect to everybody.
Should we use z2 over z? Why did you calculate this?
Why?
No.
Because this is my calculation.
You wanted the
this is my calculation threshold, z2 equals z1. So for L is Reni, the calculation threshold is when the average degree is z equals 1, which is very intuitive.
What's 1?
Hmm? Well, you go from one side to another side. If on the average you go to less than one side, you're going to die out the process. On the average you go to more than one side, 2 or 3 or 4, you have exponential growth of the number of neighbors. So you're going to reach on the average everybody.
No, I understood that. Why did you calculate that 2 over z1? And where is that 1 here? Because there's a
red
1 here.
Why? Because that's our what determines our calculation, this ratio, z2 over z1.
You're trying to calculate z2 now, or z3.
This describes the behavior when you go from one node to the next, from the first to the second to the third. And when you iterate this process, this the ratio determines how the process behaves in the measure.
Yeah. So, if we now write that explicitly, this calculation threshold. We can maybe if this answers your question, first make another calculation. The total number of sides reached is sum over n dn. That is the total number of sides I reach in this process. So this is z1 times sum over n z2 over z1 to the power n minus 1, which is our recursion formula here. So this is just a geometric series. So if I sum up this geometric series, I have z1 divided by 1 minus z2 over z1. For example, I can write it like that. z1 squared z1 minus z2. So I see that the total number of sides I reach, which are in my cluster, diverges if z2 equals going to z1 and is infinite, and it's finite if z2 is smaller than z1. So if it's finite, I mean I cannot reach the full cluster if the cluster is very large. That is the same mathematical statement about the calculation. Mm-hmm. So there's also one interpretation we can do about this calculation threshold. And if we write this condition, z2 equals z1, then this is just nothing else than k squared expectation value minus k equals k, because that is z2. So I can bring this on the other side, and so I have sum over k equals 0 to infinity k, I will put this one here, times k minus 2 dk equals 0. And we see that this, for this calculation condition, vertices is degree k equals 0 and 2 and k equals 0 to a cocongruence. That means for every graph you can add vertices with degree k equals 2 or 0 and the percolation condition is not changed. Of course, if a vertex has a degree k equals 0, it doesn't contribute, you will never reach it, so it doesn't contribute to your percolation condition. And k equals 2 also not, because k equals 2 means you have such kind of one-dimensional behavior, so you have one incoming, one outcoming, and whether you have percolation or not doesn't change, because you can just take them away and the topological structure of the graph is not changed if you take away, take out vertices with degree 2, because you just go from one subcluster to another one. So that's why they don't enter in the percolation condition.
But if, for example, the last one has k equal to 2 and is connected to the first one, then it would contribute to...
So this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if I take them all out, it's still connected. So whether this graph, subgraph here, let's say, is connected or not, doesn't depend whether I have these ones in or I can take them out. It's still connected or not connected, depending. So now something more to the interpretation. The z2, which is corresponding to k squared minus k, it is not the variance, but it's connected. Well, something closely connected, the variance would be this one minus this one squared. That would be the variance, but it's not the variance. But it's clear that if you have a degree distribution pk, it has pretty fat tail. So pk is something, and it's going down slowly. If the degree distribution pk goes down slowly, then this k squared will be pretty large. So, fat tail, this is called a fat tail if it's going down slowly. That a means normally that z2 or k squared is large. So, substantially larger than an airless Wenning graph. And so many real-world networks have these fat tails, so the degree distribution goes down only very slowly, not exponentially. So that often z2 is large, so that then you are in a percolating state that's larger than the average degree state. So as a side remark, the same, this was here, what we considered here was side percolation. So the probability, the issue was, are different sites connected to each other? But of course you could generalize this question to other kinds of calculation. Let's say we could generalize that to click calculation. And then it's the question, are different clicks of the graphs connected and when? So a click is a fully connected subgraph, and you have another click here, and another click. And you can ask, are all my clicks interconnected? So calculations, considerations, of course we don't do that here, but calculation considerations, you can generalize that if you are interested in that to other kind of objects. Doesn't have to be sites interconnected, other kind of objects can be interconnected. Or let's say you are considered only in triangles, you want to see whether all the triangles are interconnected. It's going to be more complicated to calculate, but in principle, calculations considerations can be generalized to all kinds of considerations. Just also to make an example, you know, calculating that classical calculations problems you might have heard about is, let's say, you have a river or something, and then you can lay bridges. And you want to ask yourself, which probability when I can lay bridges will I reach the other side of the river? So you have a lattice normally, and you put randomly bridges or links on the lattice. And then you can ask yourself, for example, if I have a certain link probability randomly, with which probability will I reach the other side? Also a calculation problem. So calculation problems are very widely studied issues, especially in physics and in graph theory. And here there are calculation of a random graph. This is calculation on a lattice, so a regular graph, where they bridges. And here often the question is not whether everything is connected with everything, but whether I can reach one side from the other side, and things like that. So calculations are considerations are studied in many different contexts. And the issue is always, when can I reach the other side or not? Which probability do I have depending on the parameters of my system? And here it's a number, the probability of finding a bridge between two sides, or vertex, an edge, sorry. So we can make connections what we have calculated before, introduced, namely the average distance. So how large is then the average distance? My graph. Well, I go here from one side to another side to another side. So, how far do I have to go to reach everybody? Since my, I put this one away, my number of nearest neighbor is going like Vn is equals to V2 over V1 over the power n minus 1 times V1. So if I do the same consideration like before, that I will have reached everybody if Vm is proportional roughly order of n. So it's roughly in the order of then V2 over V1. And my average distance is then L, if I go L steps, or L minus 1 step in this case here, and D1. So I can take the logarithm of that. So then I have the log of N divided by D1, should then be of the order of L minus 1 of the log of D2 by D1. An order of magnitude, or my average distance in the graph is of the order of the logarithm of n divided by z1 divided by the logarithm of d2 over d1, here to d2 of plus 1. Which is, of course, what we also had before for random graphs, that the average distance scales only with the log of n, so can be much smaller than n. And actually, we can, if we do that for an airless Rankine graph, where d2 is d1 squared, we actually get exactly log n divided by n. So for airless Rankine, for c2 equals d squared, we get l, this is formula exactly, n, sorry, log n divided by log c. So the last thing we're going to calculate is not really to do this calculation, but since we are talking here about generalized random graphs, we want still to calculate the number of loops of triangles, so the clustering coefficient. As I said, generalized random graphs are still random. In the thermodynamic limit, they don't have triangles or loops, but often, so they go, the clustering coefficient goes down like 1 over n, but the prefactor can be very important, because real world graphs are not infinite large, but they are finite number. So if the prefactor of this 1 over n is large, you can have large clustering coefficients. So it's important to calculate this prefactor. So we calculate C in the configurational model. So what is z? Z is just ki, kj in q divided by n times z. Why is that the case? So z is a probability that a neighbor b of a and a neighbor b prime of a are connected. So this is that is in proportion to the number of outgoing links here and here. So if B and B prime have more outgoing links, the probability that they are connected is larger, and the distribution of outgoing link is the excess degree distribution. And then I normalize that by n and the number of the average degree of A, which is Z. And so, since I'm random graph, I can just approximate that by today independently, because there are no correlations. The degree, the excess degree distribution of B and B prime are independently. So I can just make the multiplicative decoupling. So this is nothing else than 1 over n times z, sum over k, qk, and that to the power squared, because I have two of them. This we calculated. This is 1 over n times z, k squared minus k divided by k. Everything squared. And overall, I can put it like this. I can leave it like that, or I can also rewrite that. Doesn't matter. But the key point is the following. It is still going down in the thermodynamic limit, like 1 over n. It vanishes, as expected. But this prefactor can be pretty large, because if the distribution has a fat tail, k squared can be very large. And so this is often what happens in real-world graphs. Yes, the degree distribution Z is still vanishing, but which is a large prefactor. So that means for a real world graph, which maybe has 1,000 or 200 sites, the clustering coefficient can be still pretty large, just because you have fat tails. So the probability of having large degree sites with large degrees is larger. So this is for the prefactor. So we will go on next on Tuesday with the following issue. So we'll do exactly the same we did now, another time, but with a different formalism. And the reason for the following is I would like to give you. So what we want, the aim we want to study is the following: the robustness of graphs. That is the target of networks, actually. So take the internet, which is connected, the connection between servers. So server 1 is connected with server 2, maybe with server 3, or whatever. And the robustness of networks means if I make an attack, or if I take randomly out servers, or maybe I take important out servers, is the network still connected or not? So will the internet remain functional or not? So in order to calculate the robustness of networks, or also of a gene regulation network, what happens if I take out one gene? Will the network still work or completely be dysfunctional? So in order to study this important issue, the robustness of network, I can take out vertices, I could take out degrees, and see whether there's still calculation. So there's still a gigantic component. In order to study that, we will do the same calculation here and get the same result. But then with a new formalism, we will be able to figure out what happens if we take out vertices and then get information whether the network is robust or not. And that will depend very much on the degree distribution. A random graph has very different robustness properties than a scale-free graph or graph with fat tails. So the degree distribution will have an important impact as the network is robust. And what we will use are our probability generating functions. So I will explain that, but if you have not very much experience with probability distribution, you may take a look at that. It's always the issue in complex system theory, whether you do all the math before or not. We will have a chapter in chapter 4 on information theory and all that, chapter 3 on information theory and probability stuff, but if we do all the mathematical details before and then we only go to the content, maybe a little bit boring. So here it's a little bit, an Einschub. An addition. Explores in probability theory is not very difficult, but we could use these functions very extensively, and this probability generating function formalism we will use in this lecture many times. It's a very powerful method. Okay.